Welcome to the Reaction Podcast, hosted by me, Ian Martin, editor of Reaction. Every week we address politics, geopolitics, economics and culture, looking at the stories that matter. In Britain, the post office scandal has gripped the nation in the wake of the ITV drama Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, aired at the start of the year. Over a period of 20 years, faulty software called Horizon, provided by the Japanese company Fujitsu, falsely showed that over 700 sub-postmasters had committed fraud or stolen money. They were innocent, yet some were sent to jail, hundreds were made bankrupt, several committed suicide. Recently, belatedly, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak pledged swift justice and compensation for the victims. One of the key figures in the heroic fight lasting years has been Lord Arbuthnot. As James Arbuthnot MP, he featured in the ITV drama. His tireless work has raised awareness of the scandal and contributed to holding the powerful to account. Lord Arbuthnot is our guest today. James, welcome.
Thank you very much.
James, when did you first encounter this scandal? As in, when did you first realise that something had gone very wrong?
The first time I heard about it was on April the 3rd, 2009, when a local councillor, the local councillor for Joe Hamilton of South Warnborough, told me that there had been this very odd business of Joe Hamilton going to Winchester Court and having the entire village turn out to support her. There wasn't much I could do about it at that stage because Joe Hamilton had pleaded guilty to false accounting and I didn't see there was any appeal coming out of it. But over the following several months, first the odium sub-postmaster David Bristow came to me and said, could I meet Joe Hamilton and him to talk it through? He'd been just removed from the post office in Odeham for financial irregularities, in inverted commas.
And that's a village in your constituency?
That's a village in my constituency. And then later on, his replacement sub-postmaster was also removed for financial irregularities, in inverted commas. And I thought, this cannot be a coincidence with three people having been removed for the same sort of things. And Joe Hamilton's solicitors, Shoesmiths of Basingstoke, saying that they had tens of other sub-postmasters coming to them to say that there were real problems. So I wrote round to all MPs to say, are you having similar problems? And that was the start of a serious campaign. But that by that stage, we were towards the back end of 2011.
When did you first encounter Alan Bates, the central character among the postmasters who first identified the issue, I think in 2003? Presumably you were introduced to him by Joe Hamilton.
Well, because I wrote round to all the MPs, we agreed to have a meeting between MPs and sub-postmasters and the firm of solicitors. And that happened in February 2012, I think. And it could well be that he was at that meeting. Certainly he was referred to at that meeting. And so it could well have been then that I first met him.
This has all obviously been running for now more than 15 years. You've been involved in the campaign. It's taken a very long time. It's a familiar complaint, we've heard it in the last few weeks, that it's taken an ITV drama to produce this, and you've been aware of this problem for so long. But it must have been an incredible couple of weeks.
It has been an extraordinary couple of weeks. My inbox is completely out of control. For those who haven't received a reply, all I can say is I'm very sorry. I hope I'll get round to you soon. But it's been a phenomenal couple of weeks in the sense that we've made more progress in the last 2 weeks than we had previously made in many, many years. And I don't actually mind what it is that's got this onto the front page, but it's now firmly there. It's no longer my baby. It's the country's baby, and I think the country will see the sub-postmasters right. Too late for far too many there.
Why was it so difficult, do you think, to raise awareness of this? Why did it take so long and so much hard work from you and other campaigners?
I think there are various reasons. One thing is that here were some people who had, in many cases, pleaded guilty to criminal offences, and they were up against what was the most trusted brand in the country. And trying to persuade people that the criminals were right and the most trusted brand in the country was wrong was never going to be easy. Another aspect of this was that the government was taking a seriously hands-off approach to the entire issue. They, I think, wanted to sell either Royal Mail or the Post Office or both as going concerns. And so they had instituted this distance management, which meant that they would say, sorry, that's a contractual issue, an organisational issue for the Post Office, nothing to do with us, Gov. And that made it very difficult to get ministers of any party, frankly, to take the notice that they should have taken.
So it made the organisation, the Post Office, highly unusual, although there may be other public organisations with a similar view of themselves, made it a very strange construction in that its owner, the government, ultimately, as the shareholder, didn't really want to know too much about what was going on because it was, presumably, it was during the era of austerity. It wanted to sell it at some point. So that meant that the management was not really overseen in the way that you would expect in a normal company.
Yes, it was an arm's length arrangement. And yet, let's suppose I have a dangerous dog. I can't announce to the world that I have an arm's length arrangement with my dog. If my dog goes and bites someone, I can't say, sorry, nothing to do with me, that's an arm's length dog. And in this sense, the Post Office was a seriously dangerous dog. And the government should have taken the responsibilities of ownership. It could not repudiate that, given the sort of allegations that were coming out of so many sub-postmasters.
What do you think went wrong inside the Post Office? Is it really primarily about groupthink, about greed? Is it incompetence? Is it a combination of all of those factors?
It's a combination of all of those, but also I think that maybe the Fujitsu software Horizon was encouraged or forced onto the Post Office by a government that wanted to do industrial deals with Japan in other sectors. And that's a bargain I understand and is not too bad. But if you have faulty software that everybody knew at the time it was installed was faulty, you cannot then treat it as though it were not faulty when you're prosecuting sub-postmasters. You have to accept that it was faulty and that some of these anomalies could well be the fault of the software rather than of the sub-postmasters. So at some stage, the senior management of the Post Office seemed to forget that the software itself was known to be faulty, and they acted as though it were entirely robust, as they kept saying, and as though they'd discovered huge quantities of fraud and dishonesty amongst their sub-postmaster community.
There will, of course, be, we assume that there will be trials at some point, there will be further legal action, perhaps even criminal cases. But are you clear in your mind at this point where are we in terms of knowing whether people knew, as you just described there, that there was something wrong and covered it up? But were there others in the system who didn't know and took the assurances within the Post Office as being kosher and proceeded on that basis?
This is very much a matter for the public inquiry to unearth, and I think that they will. But there is a worry that some people decided not to know, things. There is a worry that other people decided not to tell people who should have known that things were seriously wrong. But there are some people who will have known that there were things that were seriously wrong, and so others who should have known and should have that knowledge attributed to them, whether they did know or not. And so, yes, there do need to be criminal prosecutions, I believe. Don't think it's for me to say who should be subject to those. That's for the prosecuting authorities. But there need to be consequences.
And what happens to the post office itself, do you think, longer term? You spoke of it as being formerly one of the most trusted brands in the country. It's no longer that.
It isn't. But the reason it was one of the most trusted brands in the country was because of the relationship between the sub-postmasters and the communities they served. And so for the post office to set out to trash those relationships is extraordinarily short-sighted. The post office, as one of the most trusted brands of the country, has now become probably the least trusted brand in the country, and maybe it cannot actually survive as a brand. Maybe it needs to be broken up. But the job that post offices do all around the country is extraordinarily important. The country needs community hubs throughout the country for all sorts of different reasons. Social hubs, banking hubs, as more and more banks close down or close their branches, welfare hubs, resilience hubs. And I think a community hub organisation, possibly based on the post office network, is something that the country definitely needs, and maybe the future of the post office as it currently is.
So do you envisage in a setup like that, the name, it's a historic name reaching way back, do you envisage potentially even the name, the post office, not being able to survive?
I don't think the post office as a name is now doing anybody any favours. Community hub is, well, maybe I should patent that, I don't know.
Good idea. Good idea. Just on the, I mean, you come from the Business and Trade Select Committee hearings about the post office scandal today, this morning, just before recording this. There's an inquiry ongoing. Alan Bates giving evidence as well. What stage are we at in the process now? How close are we to finding out what the public inquiry is going to conclude, the various parliamentary committees, and then, as we discussed earlier, it'll then become a legal matter?
Well, we don't know when the public inquiry will conclude, partly because the post office has done such a disastrous job in disclosing documents to the public inquiry. So each time there's another disclosure furore, it puts off the final report of the public inquiry. But I do think that the public inquiry is doing a good job in ferreting out the truth. What we now have, though, is legislation announced by the Prime Minister last week, and we have the need now to draft that legislation, which will not be easy. In the Select Committee this morning, I was asked questions about the difficulties, which I acknowledge, of the legislature overturning convictions or decisions of the courts. That is a constitutional difficulty. But I don't think it's as huge a constitutional difficulty as some think, but it is a recognised difficulty. So we've got to get that legislation right and then through both houses of Parliament. And that, I think, will take weeks. I hope it won't take more than 2 months, but it might.
But if it just on the legislation there, the alternative to that would be trying to accelerate the justice process. But is your view that that would take far too long and be too complicated? So although it is an unusual constitutional move, it's merited because this is arguably the worst miscarriage of justice in British history.
Well, I think it is. But accelerating the justice process is no good if those who have to have their convictions overturned never want to be inside a court again and will refused to come forward. We've only seen 95 of the 900 plus convictions overturned. And that's despite many pleas from many people, please come forward so that you can have your cases overturned. That's partly because of the anomalies in the overturning process. There are all sorts of different procedures involving, depending on where your conviction happened. There's one procedure if your conviction happened in the magistrate's court, another if it happened in the Crown Court. Should you have to go to the Criminal Cases Review Commission, people are not coming forward. They are so traumatised by what they've been through that they don't want to have anything to do with the courts, still less the post office, but the authorities generally. They've been humiliated in front of the communities of which they were the leaders. And I understand that. They've got PTSD, they've got all sorts of dreadful issues that will stop them coming forward. And I'm afraid the current processes are not working and would not work.
So it's had an extraordinary human cost. It's taken a toll on the people that you know, the campaigners that you've worked with.
A dreadful cost, not only on them, but on their families. You hear some of the stories of what has happened to the spouses of the sub-postmasters or the children of the sub-postmasters or the parents of the sub-postmasters. Some of them too dreadful to talk about, really. But the drama, the ITV drama, really covered that well as everything else well. And we've got to turbocharge what we do about this, and I'm grateful to the drama for helping us to do that.
We've talked a lot about the post office. We've mentioned, but only in passing really, the computer giant at the heart of all of this scandal, the Japanese company Fujitsu. What do you think, and we haven't heard that much from them until today, what do you think was going on in there as far as you can tell?
Well, all the stories about the headquarters of Fujitsu at Bracknell, which the post office described in its internal memos as the Bracknell issue, were that somebody or groups of people within Fujitsu headquarters were able to interfere in the sub-postmaster's accounts without the knowledge of the sub-postmasters, that they were able to do so without keeping any records of what it was that they were doing, without an audit trail. And apparently that they were denying to people in the post office that they could do so. Now, we heard the Fujitsu senior executive in front of the select committee this morning saying that he didn't know why nothing had been owned up to by Fujitsu before, and that he didn't know exactly what had gone on. Well, I hope that the public inquiry will get to the bottom of exactly what people in Fujitsu did know. It would be good to have more whistleblowers from Fujitsu so that we could work out in fine detail what happened. But Fujitsu was changing people's accounts without keeping a record of it while denying that they were doing it.
What do you think the government's attitude to that company should be? It's a firm, an international firm that has a lot of contracts with the UK government. Some people have suggested that the government should not be dealing with Fujitsu. Where do you stand?
They have suggested that, and there are some contracts where the government doesn't have much choice about who it deals with, possibly because there may be only one supplier of one particular thing. If we need a bit of kit, then I suppose we shouldn't cut off our nose to spite our face. But the reputation of Fujitsu has been severely damaged by this, and it will take a long time for that to recover, possibly not as long as the reputation of the post office, but nevertheless, the reputation of Fujitsu has been severely damaged.
And presumably this is being noticed in Japan.
I should think it has.
Yeah. How do you view the justice system after all of this?
Well, the justice system, amongst all the other systems that the sub-postmasters went to for help, has let them down. For example, Seema Misra applied four times for the disclosure of the evidence that the Horizon computer system was working properly. And four times the court refused her application to have that evidence so that she could defend herself properly. Lee Castleton, in the collection of a debt that wasn't actually owed, but nevertheless, of a debt of 26,000, was made to pay costs and went bankrupt as a result of 321,000. That is just completely indefensible. And the court system seems to have leant over backwards to accommodate this best brand in the country, the post office, because it seemed to them to be such a good organisation. The sub-postmasters have been badly let down by the justice system. At last, of course, when the group litigation order was made by... when the group litigation came in front of Mr. Justice Fraser, who produced an absolutely stonkingly good judgment that went into detail and got things right. At last, that was what got things moving. But on the whole, the justice system has been an awful disappointment.
And that judgment that you referred to there, that was 10 years after you first became involved, 2003, when Bates first started. Has this entire experience made you more cynical or sceptical of government and private corporations and how they work?
I suppose I was always a bit cynical or sceptical about that. But we have the government that we deserve and we have the private corporations that we pay for. I have always believed, always, that we would get to justice in the long run. But the trouble is that the long run is too long. It was the same with another issue which affected my constituency, the Chinook crash. That affected my constituency because the Odium was the base for the Chinook fleet. And I always believed that we would get to justice in that campaign. And we did. But it took 16 years. And so far, from my point of view, the post office scandal has taken 14 years. From Alan Bates's point of view, it's been more than two decades.
The Mull of Kintyre crash should explain for those who don't remember. Well, it's the 30th anniversary this year of the crash and coming up this summer. And by a remarkable coincidence, I mean, you've been involved in both of those cases. It's actually partly because of your campaigning on the Mull of Kintyre case that you ended up getting involved in such an important way in the post office scandal.
It was partly because of my campaigning. And the reason for that was that the Mull of Kintyre crash first came to my attention as a result of, first, I was a defence minister answering debates on it and saying, yes, there's nothing to see here, move on. But the magazine that first raised that issue was Computer Weekly. And eventually I came to realise that Computer Weekly was onto a really, really good point. And the editor of it, Tony Collins, was a fantastic campaigner. And so when in 2009 I first heard that Computer Weekly was interested in the post office stuff, I thought that gives this credibility that needs to be taken further. And I'm glad I did.
On the Chinook crash, can you just explain essentially what happened, what the injustice was? The pilots were erroneously blamed for the crash when effectively the Chinook had problems and shouldn't have been flying.
Well, we knew... OK, what happened was that in 1994, an aeroplane was flying from Northern Ireland to Scotland and crashed into the Mull of Kintyre. There had been problems which had been announced by Port and Down beforehand with that particular aircraft. The pilots had written emails saying, "We are very unhappy about flying this aircraft because of these problems." Anyway, the helicopter crashed. All the people on board were killed. Precisely what had caused the crash, nobody is yet sure of. It could have been software problems with what was known as FADEC, the control system. It could have been a heart attack of one of the pilots, or even conceivably both. The problem was that the rules of the RAF required that only in cases where there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever should deceased aircrew be found negligent. And in this case, because nobody knew exactly why the aircraft had crashed, there was plenty of doubt as to what had caused it. And the Board of Inquiry followed that rule of absolutely no doubt whatsoever and said that it was impossible to say what had caused the crash. But that Board of Inquiry report was overturned by two air marshals who wanted to attribute blame, and who did. And it took 16 years to put that right.
Now, that's another example of, we're talking about groupthink within the post office, but that case has always struck me as, well, it's fascinating the way in which politicians such as yourself, who were given assurances at the time, and Malcolm Rifkind, who was, I think, Defence Secretary, either at the time of the crash or shortly afterwards, you were given these assurances, and the machine then starts to believe a story about itself, and the whole process becomes self-fulfilling, doesn't it? Self-justifying. That the question then becomes about the defence of the institution rather than what's right and what's wrong. But there's something in your personality with both of these cases that causes you to go right back to the root of it and to try and establish the truth.
Yes, I don't know what it is in my person. It's an incapacity to let things go. But the politicians, you need a determination to get into politics in the first place. I believe that my particular campaign would have been carried out by almost any MP who had a constituent like Joe Hamilton, whom it is impossible to disbelieve, and then two sub-postmasters in Odium, one after another, who suffer the same fate. I think any MP would have followed it up in the way that I did, and I just happened to be in position at the time.
What about public attitudes to politicians in general? I think it's a bit rich for a journalist to say that the public reputation of politicians is low, but we're both sort of, as professions, bumping along the bottom somewhere along with estate agents. But there is such public cynicism about this that, I mean, it seemed to be somehow treated in, not to criticise the ITV drama, but it seemed to somehow be regarded as extraordinary in the ITV drama that a Conservative MP was taking this so seriously and being so vociferous in terms of campaigning for justice. But as you put it, that's not that shocking, or shouldn't be.
Well, I don't think it's that shocking, and I don't think it's an issue of party either. Actually, possibly the major breakthrough in this story was when a Labour MP, Kate Osborne, asked a question of Boris Johnson, the Conservative Prime Minister, namely, can we have an inquiry into the post office scandal? And Boris Johnson said, probably not having the slightest idea what it was he was letting himself in for, yes, we'll have a public inquiry. And then the civil service and the post office tried desperately to limit that. But when the judgment of Mr. Justice Fraser came out, that blew everything out of the water. So it's not a matter of party, this stuff. It's a matter of being at the right place at the right time. And Kate Osborne was, and started off where we are now. And so much has come out of the public inquiry that it helped to lead to this drama, which has blown the bloody doors off.
It absolutely has. But does it worry you, though, that politicians, the bloke in pub analysis of the political class, I mean, politicians have never been particularly popular, but there's now such extreme cynicism about it. And I think one of the services that you've provided is that it is an obvious counter to that argument. All politicians are in it for themselves. Westminster can't get anything right. Nothing really works in politics. Now, it took a very long time, and it was down to your dogged campaigning with your fellow campaigners. But it's an example of politics working, isn't it?
Well, in a sense, yes. But as I say, that's not a party issue, nor is it a personal issue from the point of view of my character. It's something I think that almost any MP would have done. But I have the disadvantage not only of being a politician, but also of being a lawyer. So I'm used to this.
Is there anything you think can be done structurally in terms of reform of government and public institutions which ensures that nothing like this happens again? Or is it naive to hope for that? You know, is there something you can change in the way that bureaucracies communicate or are accountable to Parliament? Or is this just the way it is in human affairs?
I'm sure that there are lots of things that we can do. For example, we can move away from the idea of a large government organisation doing private prosecutions, because that would be a huge mistake. The post office was acting as the prosecutor and the evidence provider in its own interests. That's not sustainable. We can move away from the presumption that computer evidence is reliable. What we move to from that is not absolutely clear yet, but that's the sort of thing that we need to change as a matter of some speed. We can move away from this model of arm's length organisations. That is a model which, in my view, does not work, and it needs to be re-examined. A lot is going to come out of this Horizon scandal, the post office scandal. I think it's going to be very far-reaching in its impacts, and I think it should be, because somehow it has touched a nerve amongst the British people. And the reason for that is the relationship between the sub-postmaster and the community that the sub-postmaster serves. And that is a very important, very close relationship, and you monkey with that at your peril.
Is there a glimpse of our future, do you think, in this scandal, in that as artificial intelligence becomes a bigger factor in terms of running bureaucracies and the machines, the computers, become more powerful, among the general population, we're going to have to be more sceptical about technology, the idea that computer says no, the computer is not always right, that the people inputting the data or designing the systems can be wrong. Do you think this is a timely warning for us to be more wary and sceptical?
That's a good question, to which the answer is yes, it is a timely warning. Precisely what we do with that timely warning is going to be very complicated. Artificial intelligence is a wonderful tool, but a terrifying master. And quite how we keep on top of it, we have yet to work out.
James Arbuthnot, Lord Arbuthnot, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Reaction podcast. The work we do at Reaction can't happen without your support. If you're not a subscriber, then consider becoming one for £8 a month or £80 a year. For the price of a cup of coffee a week, you get my weekly newsletter exclusively for Reaction subscribers, the excellent Reaction Daily Briefing from our fine team of journalists keeping you up to date on the stories that matter, and some of the best commentary and analysis around from our columnists such as Adam Bolton, Tim Marshall, and Maggie Pagano. Until next time, thank you for listening.